This is Joseph Giacobelli. I'm an analyst, investor, author, and the host of the Asia Climate Finance Podcast, which is a philanthropic series dedicated to the promotion of knowledge and discussion on sustainable finance in Asia from the perspective of the business of decarbonization and the energy transition in the region, which consumes about half of the world's energy and electricity. Please support this effort by liking and by subscribing to the podcast. Hello there, and welcome to the 26th episode of the Asia Climate Finance Podcast. For those of you who follow the Lunar New Year, allow me to wish you a very, very happy Year of the Rabbit. In today's episode, we have as our guest Ms. Mika Obayashi, who is a director at the Renewable Energy Institute in Japan. You can access some of the research by this think tank by going to www.renewable-ei.org, www.renewable-ei.org, and you'll find lots of very thoughtful and very interesting research reports and various proposals on their website. Today's episode is about Japan's government policies and track record when it comes to renewable energy. So that's the first kind of area we discuss. We dig down a little bit into Japan's domestic decarbonization kind of objectives, as well as its overseas decarbonization aims as well. And Mika-san has offered some very interesting insights in these areas. Please enjoy the show. Hi there, and again, welcome to episode 26 of the Asia Climate Finance Podcast. Today, we are talking about Japan, and we're talking about Japan with Ms. Mika Obayashi, who's the director at Japan's Renewable Energy Institute. Good afternoon, Mika-san, and thank you very, very much for participating in the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me to this.
That's great. That's great. I know you've been traveling a lot, so I'm sure you must be quite tired and quite busy. So again, I appreciate your participation in the podcast. If I could start, as we usually do, to try to give listeners a little bit of a better understanding about you yourself. So could you tell us a little bit about your background, please?
Yeah. So my name is Mika Obayashi. I'm a director at the Renewable Energy Institute. This institute is rather new, I can say. We established this organization just after the Fukushima accident back in 2011 March. So it's about the 12 years ago now. At the time that I was in Abu Dhabi, I was working for the International Renewable Energy Institute then, but I was totally shocked by the Fukushima nuclear accident. And I decided to go back to Japan because I thought that my country is facing the crisis. And actually that I have been involved in the anti-nuclear movement and then renewable energy promotion and the climate change discussion for past 20 years. So it's almost 30 years now. So I decided to go back. And then actually that I saw that all the kind of presentations and the news information from Japan until I finally got back to Japan in August. And then during those 5 months, that I monthly basis, I went back to Japan actually for the preparation. And then somehow I got the information that Mr. Masayoshi Son, CEO of the SoftBank, had the intention to set up the policy research institute, especially on renewables. Mm-hmm. So I saw I must join this institute. I contacted him that through my previous, organization's friends. And then I met him in May when I came back. And then he said you can come back to Japan. So I thought that it's a kind of a signal that you can join my institute or something like that. So I finally came back to Japan August 2011 and then joined to establish this organization. So as I briefly said, that this organization is especially focusing on renewable energy policy research because we believe Japan has money, Japan has technology, but actually if you see the society and the economy, that renewable energy are not promoted on the ground. So I think, and we thought that the biggest problem is there's no policies to implement renewables. So we wanted to rather focusing on the policy implementation of renewables. That is the background of our institute and myself.
No, that's absolutely great. And I think we could talk about March 11, 2011, for hours. I have a lot of very strong opinions about that, and one of the saddest events in Asia in the past decades. But let's be a little bit more cheerful. Let's talk about renewable energy and how renewable energy can actually help. So perhaps we can, for those listeners who don't really have a good background on Japan. I think most people will know that Japan does not have its own coal and oil and gas, and so it has to import basically 100% of its needs. But perhaps we could start a general discussion before we talk about policy and the government on just the development of clean energy in Japan. Where did we come from? Obviously, before 2011, it was a very, 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 very low base. but what has been the development of clean energy in Japan, Mika-san?
Yeah. So as a kind of a history of Japanese energy policy and development, as you said, Japan is not energy sufficient, and then almost all fossil fuel energy that we import. But in terms of the electricity basis, not the primary energy basis, but the second energy basis, we had the 10% of electricity from big hydro in past, several decades. It's a very stable, and then it's a kind of a renewable energy. And after the March 11th of that Fukushima accident, in 2012, Japan introduced the German type of feed-in tariff scheme for promotion of renewables. And then after that, so-called new renewables, such as solar PV and wind power, accelerated to develop. So the top on the 10% of hydro power energy, it's now about 10 to 12% is coming from new renewables. But if you see the details or portion of that new renewables, most is covered by the solar PV. And second is a bioenergy. And then geothermal and wind power. And at the energy basis, energy capacity basis, gigawatt base, in 2010 to 2011, Japan used to have the 5 gigawatt of solar PV. And it's mostly the rooftop solar because Japanese kind of a very environmental interest people invested in the expensive rooftop solar to do that. But after the installation of feed-in tariff, that the first time that the solar electricity business came up, And in past decade, that Japan developed more than 70 gigawatt of solar PV. So at the end of 2021, I'm sorry that I didn't have the end of 2022nd figure yet, but it was like 74 gigawatt already. So I'm sure last year we increased that 6 gigawatt or something like that. So now Japan has the 880 gigawatt of solar PV now. And then it is providing 8 to 9% or 10% of electricity to Japan. And then if I see the wind power, it's still minimum stage. We used to have the 3 gigawatt back in 2011, and now it's still 4.6 gigawatt basis. So probably it will be 5 gigawatt last year. So compared to the solar PV, wind energy is very slow to grow. But so as a whole, so with the big hydropower electricity and the new renewables, it is now the around 22% is supplied by renewables for the electricity mix. So especially the last decade after March 11th of 2011, it's really rapidly increased, I can say.
So for wind, you know, obviously there's some geographical, geological, et cetera, limitations to have lots of onshore wind. But I know that there's a big effort to have offshore wind. And I think that effort, you know, they've been talking at least about it for the last 3 or 4 years. So do you think that now offshore wind is the priority when it comes to clean energy in Japan?
Yes. So the offshore energy development in Japan has just started, I have to say. So we have been talking about offshore wind like 5 years or something that after 2011. You know, that at the time that in Europe, offshore wind is taking off. But it's a starting phase, I believe. And then last 5 years, really offshore wind taken off, and then we could see the gigawatt basis of project in Europe. And 2 years ago, China introduced a 17 gigawatt, just one country, 1 year. That's a crazy development. And then maybe last year they did as well. So it's really accelerated now. So Japan, you know, we are just past 5 years that we are discussion phase and in planning phase. And last year, November, first big scale of offshore wind started the operation in Akita. And at the same time, the Japanese government introduced the auctioning scheme 2 years ago. And then they called for a tender for the 1.5 gigawatt and the end of 2021, they selected the Mitsubishi as the winner for all three areas projects. And the last year, just 1 month ago, they called another tender. That is a 1.7 gigawatt. And then probably that the winner will be announced in the end of this year. So you know, after 2 years that we could get 1.5 and 1.7 gigawatt. And then actually the government target for the operation of the offshore wind by 2030 is 5.7 gigawatt. We think it's the small scale.
Yes.
So we're just accelerating the development. And then government is always saying like it's very difficult to get the consent of the local areas, like fishermen, local communities, and something like that. So Japan is different from other countries in that way. But I think somehow it's true. But I have to say that the current scheme of development of the offshore wind is all the kind of a first stage of getting the consent from the local area and then see the investigation and environmental assessment. All of the things are just thrown to the developers So each company really responsible for that. And several plural companies that get into the one place and are living there for 3 years, 4 years, and attending the local areas festivals every year, and then try to communicate with the local community and then get the consent from, you know, fishermen there. So this is the situation. So we are calling for the government, and the industry is calling for the government, that the government has to be more responsible to get that communication with local area.
And I mean, go ahead.
And also another difficulty is the grid planning and the grid connection. That has been the huge obstacle for the Japanese renewables, especially for wind power, including offshore and onshore. So I think that you might know the Japanese electricity system is still divided into 10 parts, and then 10 big incumbent utilities basically has the obligation to adjust the supply and demand. And then they used to be the one company, the power generation, transmission and distribution one company. So they are the local monopoly, vertically integrated company. So they could have all the information of the consumers and also other power generators as well. So it's very difficult for the decentralized renewables to get into the market and then connect the grid. So it's still continuing, I have to say. Government introduced unbundling in 2020, but still the incumbent utilities influence is quite big. And so the offshore wind developers, including incumbent utilities, are suffered from those barriers still. So I have to say that the government has to have the clear message, transparent market for all the kind of generators, and then the transmission operators, you know, that this transmission system, grid connection, is quite independent. Independently managed and then open for all renewables.
In terms of history, if I am correct, or if I remember correctly, I think that the ministry responsible for the electric power industry, METI, the Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry, METI has always been kind of passive, ask industry or whatever to do things first, and then, you know, they will put kind of rules, regulations, guidance around it. They haven't been proactive. It's only the last few years that they've been pushed to be proactive. And one of the things that makes me, and that's just my personal opinion, one thing that makes me really frustrated about Japan is, like you said earlier, you know, funding is not an issue. Technology is definitely not an issue. Human resources is a lot of very, very capable people domestically, but it's not happening. And when we're talking about clean energy in general, I mean, I belong to the school of thought that decarbonization, energy transition, getting to net zero, et cetera, the first pivot, it's not a chicken or the egg. The first pivot is government policy. And that's actually the reason why you went back to Japan in the first place in 2011, which is, by the way, admirable. So in my opinion, it doesn't really matter if the government is very strong at executing or very weak at executing, as long as the policy is there, as long as the policy is clear. And so from that perspective, could you maybe explain a little bit about the Japanese government's ambitions in terms of reducing Japan's reliance on fossil fuels? Because I'm sure that anybody who knows about energy in Japan understands that relying almost 100% on imports, especially today, is not a good idea. And I think it was TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Power, which announced just a few days ago that they're going to be increasing electricity prices in Tokyo area by 30%. So, and the reason is because of the imported fuels. So again, sorry for the comments plus the question. So the question is, could you explain a little bit about what Japanese government's ambition in terms of reducing Japan's reliance on fossil fuels? And we could touch on topics like the levelized cost of energy parameters, or the hope for nuclear or CCS, or also we can talk about the different hydrogens. I call it multicolor hydrogen because, you know, there's green, there's purple, there's blue, there's all sorts of colors. So it's a big question, but could you address that, please?
Yeah. I'm sorry to say, but currently that I don't see that any signal from the Japanese government to reduce the relying on fossil fuels. I mean, that they think that they intend to reduce the percentage of reliance, but I believe they continue to rely on fossil fuel even by 2050. So that their former policy, I have to say. So, and then it's surprising to see the current energy crisis. I have to say that it is not the energy crisis. It's a fossil fuel crisis, I have to say.
Yes.
Fossil fuel crisis really accelerated Japanese government to secure more and more fossil fuel in coming years. That's really paradox. I totally convinced that there is a group of the people inside of METI, inside of parliament, that they are clearly thinking that they have to go for almost 100 renewables. Otherwise, there's no real independence of energy. But most of the government direction and then some of the industry's direction is to go in for the fossil fuel as it is. So probably that using the form of the fossil fuel is different because it's not the simple coal-fired power plant. It's not a simple gas-fired power plant. They are talking about that ammonia, hydrogen based on fossil fuel. And then with that gray or blue, I have to say there's no blue hydrogen yet on the planet, I have to say. But anyway, so because that it means like a CCS, CCUS, there's no serious commercial scale of CCS, CCUS yet. But anyway, so they are talking about that the blue or gray hydrogen ammonia to be incinerated in the coal-fired power plant. I just really don't understand the kind of a energy calculation of that, because we create some fuel from fossil fuel and then burn it in the incinerator. So it's a huge loss of energy that I have to say. But that is the Japanese government formal project and then plan. And actually that the government has some figures for 2050. It is like in the electricity use, the renewable will reach 50% to 60%. And the others will be 10 plus something will be delivered by the nuclear and then ammonia incineration. And it's about electricity. So not all the energy use will be electrified. So the other energy use, such as industry and transport, still largely rely on fossil fuel use. So, and then according to them, it's fine because all the emission will be absorbed and stored on the ground. It's a kind of a CCS thinking. And then according to the government calculation, additionally, that they say, like, there's no kind of enough space in Japan to bury such kind of large amount of CO2 under the ground. So there is a suitable and a more cost-effective place in the neighboring countries, especially the southern Eastern Asian countries. Mm-hmm. So it is exactly written in the government document. I think it's, I'm sorry, insane that the whole world is going for the carbon neutrality. And then actually Southeast Asian countries that have the huge, huge potential of renewable energy expansion, the fossil fuel is more expensive than the renewables such as solar, offshore wind in those countries. And then we tried to lock in those countries to export the gas turbine and the CCS technology, the prototype of experiment or something like that. And I'm really afraid that, for example, this year's G7 discussion, Japanese government wants to put those kind of agenda, so-called the zero emission thermal power to save Asia or something like that. So domestic policy really connected with their international energy policy now, I have to say. Yeah.
It's mesmerizing. I mean, there's a lot of governments out there globally that are doing some things which don't make sense. But the difference with Japan, in my personal experience, and I started looking at Japanese electricity back in 1992, 1993. So it's been a few years. And one of the things that just absolutely surprises me is the lack of vision. I mean, you know, Japan is very, very, very good at excellent at planning, at structuring things. But when it comes to, when it comes to that, it's very, very strange. I'll get on to two more areas before we kind of wrap up. One area is if you could talk a little bit about nuclear, because I think it's an important parameter in Japan, and you know, Japanese kind of government ambitions on that versus the reality. And then there's another couple of questions that I have. Yeah, if you could
provide
your thoughts about nuclear. Yeah.
Yeah, of course, that we can have another session if you need. Because next year, I'm rather flexible. Not this week, but anyway. So as for the nuclear power, it was really sudden. The Prime Minister Kishida announced that Japan will think of the additional construction of new reactors, such as the advanced or kind of a... I don't know the English name, but it's a revolutionary type of new reactors that we will commit to construct. And also that we used to have the lifetime limit of reactors. It is the 40 years lifetime. And then if the reactor passed the regulation or something like safety standards, that they can extend until 60 years, so 20 years expansion. But Kishida administration suddenly said that it will be lift off those kind of regulations. And it's because of the safety standard regulation that some of the current reactors stopped for more than 10 years because of after the accident. So those years of 10 years that will be not counted as the age limit. So even if the real reactor age is 50 years, but the 10 years stopped, that that reactor is counted as 40 years old or something like that. So at the end, as a consequence, 60 years lifetime expansion is just a lift off, and then it could be 70 years or something like that. That's the things that they are now talking about. And then after Fukushima accident, 10 reactors got started the operation. And then actually 17 reactors, 17 reactors got the permission, but the only 10 reactors out of those 17 started the operation. So still the 7 reactors are waiting for the operation. So the Kishida administration and the incumbent UTT, those are the owner of reactors, thinks that the shutting down reactors has to start the operation and then get the electricity as soon as possible. Otherwise, that they have the limit of the age and then probably 5 years that they can produce the electricity, but has to stop. It will become the huge, how can I say, the stranded cost for power companies because they invested a lot of money for the safety standards and then just 5 years operation. So they just take off that limit. So as far as I think, so the new construction of additional reactors, they say the revolutionary reactor or the advanced reactors, but it's a kind of a similar type of reactors that in Europe that you are constructing, like a kind of EPR or something kind of reactor. So it's not new or revolutionary new. So I think that the government mentioned to construct those new reactors is to maintain the industry and technology and engineers and those industry. So it's a kind of a signal, you know, we continue to promote nuclear or something like that. But we are not sure it's really happened, something like that. So the real aim is to prolong the existing reactor's lifetime and then reopening the shutting down nuclear. That is, I think, the real intention to announce the nuclear thing.
Yeah, again, it's a very, very sad state of affairs. But I know you're off on yet another trip pretty soon. So I had just one last big question. One is, you know, basically it's what do you think that Japan can actually get to use 100% clean energy by 2050, or at least be net zero by 2050? That's the first part of the question. The second part is just some final thoughts, some wrap up, some conclusions from you.
I have to say that if the current policy of the Japanese government continues, of course, it's very difficult to reach 100% of renewables by 2050. As I said, that even under the electricity usage that they say that the 50 to 60% is for renewables, it's very small percentage. I have to say it's a figures for like 2025 in European countries. And then because now more than half of the European countries have the target of 80% or 100% by 2030. So that Japan's target for 2050 is, you know, really very low, I have to say. So it's very difficult. But of course, there always be opportunity, actually the huge opportunities to reach 100% of renewables by 2050. It's our study that done by 2 years ago. And then now we are doing the current, different, another study of the grid management and then decarbonized grid system by 2050. There is huge, huge opportunity that we can reach 100%. But for that we need the more restructuring of the power market and then also the strengthening the grid as well as the changing the management of the grid. And then also we have to continue to tackle on the deregulation and restructuring and then taking out the artificial barriers to implement renewables. And according to our study, the half of the electricity, 100% renewables, half of the electricity will be supplied by PV solar. and others will be supplied by the offshore wind and onshore wind. So for that future, that we need a more flexible grid system. And then if we can, that is really flexible, if we can integrate the grid system with other countries as well.
That's great. So do you have any major, just to conclude, Mika-san, any kind of takeaways or final thoughts or conclusions about the future?
About the future? That's very difficult.
Or the present about, you know, the government as well.
Yeah, I mean that now the Japanese government is saying that it used to be said like Japan is different, but now they started to say Asia is different. And then saying like Asia still needs to rely on, you know, the coal-fired power plant fossil fuel use. I don't know. I mean, that what Japan needs to do is to promote that the renewable energy technology, and then also that run the energy efficiency and the energy saving technology from other parts of the world, and then implement those renewables and energy saving as a domestic market, and then strengthen the domestic market, and then give the partnership with the Asian countries to grow further together. That is needed. I'm sorry, it's really not concrete.
No, it's, I mean, it'd be very difficult to be concrete. But I really know you have to go, Mika-san, so I wanted to say thank you very, very, very much for your time, for your great, great, great insights. And I think, hopefully in a few months we can do this again. And hopefully in a few months we'll have some positive news out of the Japanese government. So once again, thank you very much. Or I should say it in Japanese, domo arigato gozaimashita, hontoni. And we're looking forward to speaking to you again very soon.
Yeah, thank you very much. Obrigada. Bye.
I hope you did enjoy this episode of the Asia Climate Finance Podcast. I would really appreciate any feedback, topic ideas, etc. My contact is in the show notes. Thank you.